I'm Bay, and you're listening to Bay Baltimore, a weekly pop culture and society podcast recorded in a quiet neighborhood in Baltimore. This episode, I'm actually not in Baltimore. I'm in South Carolina, as I mentioned last episode. Seeing family, still celebrating my wedding anniversary with the hubby, stuff like that. And anyway, so we're having a little down period because we're here for a while. And you know how it is. It's like you got all these plans to do things, but sometimes you just want to sit in the corner. You know what I mean? Because like the point of a vacation is to, in many ways, slow down and relax. And so that's what we're doing right now. Anyway, what I want to talk about today is something that hit me by accident. It's something I stumbled on by accident, and it just reminded me of something that I've known since I moved to, I'd like to say since I moved to Baltimore, but if I'm being honest, since I moved to the East Coast. And that is sex trafficking and sex work along 95. Okay, so yeah, so blah, 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 blah. We're down here having fun and all of that stuff. But we check. So the hubby and I, we drive down to visit his people in South Carolina. So it's like a mini family reunion, a mini wedding anniversary thing. And then just we need a vacation at the end of the summer, like leading right into Memorial Day. Anyway, so we're gonna be here for a minute. So we decide to drive down Baltimore to where we are in South Carolina, in but so many hours, and we like to drive anyway, so we just drove down. And I used this website that I'm not going to mention because I ain't getting no money for it. So anyway, but there's a particular booking website that I used to arrange our hotel. And I looked at the rating of our hotel and of the hotel that was recommended to me. You know how you go, how you do. You use a booking site for so many times that the booking site itself begins to recommend certain types of hotels for you, depending on what your previous accommodations were. So this particular hotel, there was a particular hotel that was recommended for me and the hubby to stay in. And, you know, I was like, okay, cool. The price is right for the amount of time that we're going to be there. Cool. I don't know jack about the area, but I figure if it's around food and other hotels that we should be straight. You know how when you're traveling down south, unless you're staying in a major city, you're kind of just relegated to staying near the highway and being within driving distance of cool things to do. And so that's kind of where we are right now. We're near the highway, like, you know what I mean? Like one of those towns that's right next to the highway, but it's like bigger than most towns in the area, but it's not like a big city. Anyway, so we're here in, I pick this particular hotel and I'm like, okay, well, it's at least there's going to be things around there, something to eat. There's a movie theater. There's something for us to do. Should we not want to do a daily excursion to like one of the bigger cities in the state or anything like that? And so, you know, I pick it and we drive down, you know, 95 is terrible sometimes depending on when you leave and certain parts of 95, because when you get in Virginia, a couple of things. Virginia is one of the, it takes forever to get out of Virginia if you're driving. Number one. Number two, there are times when if there is an accident on 95, you ain't close at all to an off-ramp or I call them escape routes, because I always need to have my escape routes because something always jumps off on a major interstate. There's always an accident. There's always a mile or more long backup due to some sort of accident. So I always try to figure out, you know, like a little back route so we can take the back way. Thing is, on certain parts at 95, you don't have that luxury, so you just stuck. But thankfully, you know, of course, we ran into an accident, and of course, you know, in driving down there, we were able to get through a few escape routes. And so we finally get to our hotel. It's late. And we finally get to our hotel, and I'm like, okay, cool, cool, cool. Just like the map suggested, there's a lot of food around here, and there's a mall not very far, so we're not going to be bored to death. Anyway, so we pull in, and, you know, we're about to do the whole check-in thing. And I knew something was different from the jump when I couldn't. So my husband stayed in the car, stayed with the stuff, and I ran inside to check us in. And I knew something was off. Number one, there's a lot of people outside. Number two, we couldn't go into the lobby of the hotel. Now, you know, most hotels, you check in is after three. It's like three and after, right? And they always take your first night's rent. So they don't care first night's hotel stay. So they don't care when you arrive, so long as you do arrive for your stay, to begin your stay. And so we arrived, to be honest with you, we left Baltimore way too late. And then to account for the traffic, we just got here darn near midnight. Anyway, but my first clue was there was a lot of people just outside. And I'm like, okay, well, maybe, you know, it's Saturday night. You know what I mean? Maybe, you know, I don't know. I was just like, it's Saturday night. That's what I chalked up all the people being outside to was Saturday night. So step two was when I went to go check in, I couldn't go into the lobby. The door was locked. So we were in the little corridor. No shade. We were in the corridor. So the little double door, you know how there's two sets of double doors. The first set of double doors get you from outside to the corridor. And then another set of double doors get you from the corridor to the foyer of the hotel itself. Couldn't get in the foyer, had to check in at the window between the double doors on the outside and the double doors in the corridor or in the foyer. Anyway, so I was like, okay, cool, cool. All right, that's a little weird, but you know, safety precautions, okay. That's a little troubling for me because if I can't go in the foyer at a certain time of night, that probably means y'all done had some dealings with some ne'er-do-wells, and for your safety, for the safety of your staff, you have locked these doors. I'm gonna put a pin in that, but I'm ready to get in the room, so let me handle this business. So I give her my card, the person that was checking me in, I give her the card. We handle our business, and then they take the entire amount. Like, there's not a hold, there's not a 150, there's not a 150 deposit for like cleaning fees and stuff. No, they take the entire amount, stay amount, which we had. Like, that's not a problem. It's just I'm used to staying in hotels, and just roll with me. Like, I didn't know what I was thinking, and I probably should have read the reviews a little bit more. But it was becoming clear to me as I kept talking and working with her that I wasn't able to be in the lobby. We had to stay in this little corridor. That, okay, this is not the type of hotel that I thought it was, but we're here now and we can make any decisions we want to make in the morning. I pay for the entire stay. I get our keys, I hop back in the car, there's a line of people ready to check in out behind me, and I'm like, okay. And it's a bunch of families, P.S. It's a whole bunch of families just trying to kind of looking like we are, like, what is this? Like, I didn't expect this to be this, but here we are. Anyway, so, you know, the hubby and I get back in the car, we drive to, it's one of those hotels where the room is on the outside. Like, you enter the room from the outside. And so we park right in front of our door. And, you know, again, it's a lot of people out. It's a lot of people out. So we back up. We, you know, get ready to do our thing, pull all our stuff in. And I'm steady seeing people. Let me be clear. Not just people out. Not just people looking like they're coming from the club or something like that. Looking like people who've been here and this is the spot. Like, there are a bunch of people who know each other, who are staying in and around these hotels. And let me be clear, I'm actually not even talking about the hotel I'm staying in. I'm talking about the hotel that's directly next to our hotel. And we have a bird's eye view of all of this activity. And it's like, it's one of those hotels where it's like two floors, and there are two floors on the exterior. So in order to get to the rooms on the second floor, you got to walk up an exterior set of steps, and then you're walking along the along the balcony to get to whatever your room is. Anyway, so the way we parked, we have a bird's eye view. Not a bird's eye view. We have a clear view of second floor balcony to this hotel that's right next to us. And everybody's out. Everybody, there are literally chairs sitting outside of the rooms. A bunch of them. And people just sitting out there looking like I'm sitting out on my porch, only they're sitting out of these hotels. And I'm just like, this is so strange to me. I'm so used to hotels being used for places to lay your head because you're about to go and do something else in the morning, sometime throughout the day. Like, this ain't the place where you come for vacation. This is the place where you sleep on vacation. This ain't, you know what I mean? You don't spend extended time in the hotel unless you're not feeling well or you just need a break from all of the things that you're doing. So I'm like, okay, cool. Let me just mind my own business. Baby, let's get in the house. Okay, cool. I'm saying the house because, again, that's just the language I use. Anyway, so I said, let's go on and get in the house, meaning the hotel room. So we get in, lay our head, get comfortable, go to sleep. We figure things out in the morning. We wake up and we leave our doors. And again, the doors are on the exterior. So we just walk straight out to our car, to the sidewalk, and to the view of the hotel next door. And who should we see but them same people? For the most part, look to be the same people that were sitting down in them chairs in front of them daggone doors when we went to bed, or when we went into the room. We saw essentially similar people. At least if it wasn't the same people, they were sitting in the same chairs in front of the same room windows. We come out and bam, there they go. And I'm like, I will be. For real, you ain't got nowhere to be. You live here. You must live here. That was my thinking. That was the logic that I was using. I'm like, you sitting out here, look, you real comfortable like you live here. So I'm like, okay, again, not my business. Let's go get this free breakfast. So, you know, hubby and I were going getting our breakfast. My wheels are turning because since a little girl, my mom and my dad in different ways have instilled, I'm nosy by nature. I want to know things, right? I want to know things. I love information. I love information. I love processing information. I like talking about information. I like arguing about it. I love learning things. I do. And so, including about my surroundings. And so I like to know what's going on. And growing up in Baltimore has taught me that learning things is good, but being too nosy can be bad for your health. So you pick and choose when you want to be inquisitive. And that's just a side effect of living in the city, a country girl coming to the city, or just in general. It's good to be aware. It's also real good to mind your own business. Anyway, so I'm like, okay, let me just put things in perspective. It's clear that some things are going on here. Like something above, this is where people stay. You know what I mean? Like, because there's an aspect of hotel life where for whatever reason, folks are down on their luck or some things happen, either something with their home, or either good or bad. Like something could have gone wrong with their home and their home is being renovated because some tragedy happened, or they're getting their bathroom remodeled and they just staying in a hotel for now. And they don't really care what type of hotel they stay in because they're not going to be in there long anyway. excuse me. So, you know, all of these things are running through my head. And then again, we in South Carolina for a number of different things. Number one, we love the state. We love the beach here. We love some of the major cities here. And my hubby has family here. So we visit in family and stuff like that. And some of our younger cousins come and visit us at our hotel. And we talking and stuff like that. And all of a sudden, not all of a sudden, but just in conversation, I mentioned how it's curious that folks just out, like all times of the day for the most part. There are periods of time where it's just a ghost town, obviously around cleaning time. But for the most time, folks are just out and sitting out on the I'm calling it the veranda. It's not even a veranda. It's like the second floor by the railings outside of their windows, like it's their own porch. And I'm like, that's so odd. Do a lot of people live here or something like that? Like, is this hotel that's next to our hotel, like where people live? And my cousin was like, no, these people are working. And by working, she was saying that there's prostitution happening and there's pimping happening in these hotels. And it just blew my mind, because it was like, as soon as when she said that, I was like, my mind is blown. And again, listening to Diamond Styles of Marsha's Plate, and listening to Tea with Q and J, I'm learning more about, number one, sex work, and number two, prostitution, why some people get into prostitution more than Hookers at the Point that I ever learned from that HBO documentary series. Look it up. Hookers on the Point. I think it's based in New York. Anyway, it was middle 90s, early to middle 90s. Just look it up. But I've also learned, you know, just living in Baltimore, and actually not even Baltimore, on the East Coast, a lot about sex trafficking and the age where sex trafficking happens. And at least on the East Coast, how young girls are funneled and shipped off to different places, like that whole process. Santoya Brown is a prime example of the age of a girl who's sex trafficked. I don't really know her. I don't rightly know her background in terms of her family background, but like, sex trafficking age is like from 12 to 14. Like, that's when people, these gross men and other people snatch them up and use them for sex work, put them in sex trafficking, human trafficking. Anyway, so as soon as when she said that this the hotel that's next to ours is used primarily for, it's known for sex workers, sex work and prostitution, my wheels just started turning, and I started to thinking about human trafficking and how what I learned in Baltimore, and even in when I was living in Syracuse, was, you know, how much 95 was used as a highway to traffic young girls. And how, again, learning from Diamond Styles about why she got into sex work, where she was essentially forced into sex work, puts a whole different perspective on it, because I was going to the car or something like that, and I happened to see a woman walking up a dude to one of the rooms where one of the guys was sitting out in front of, and I was like, okay, I hope she's not here against her will. And oh, by the way, why is this happening in plain sight? It's nighttime, but why is this happening in plain sight? Don't the hotel managers know what their rooms are being used for? How come the hotel that I'm in isn't telling on, you know, calling the cops on these people? And my cousin was like, yeah, I mean, they do that. What happens is they do these raids. They come through and they get everybody, round everybody up, throw them in jail. The jail ain't but so far away from here. The prison ain't but so far away from here anyway. But it just keeps coming back. And so anyway, so today, so just thinking about that, what I want to do is just spend some time talking about probably something you already know, but something that was just interesting for me, and something that even in Baltimore, you know, there are whole communities of folks that are trying to combat it hard, especially for the amount of young women that are sex trafficked or human trafficked out of Baltimore and through Baltimore, through the years. So I'm going to talk about human trafficking, kind of talk about, just reiterate some of the reasons why some folks might be engaged in it. Not sex trafficking, sex work. There's a difference between sex work and sex trafficking. Sex trafficking, well, I'll get into that in a minute, but like, I just want to talk about it briefly because, again, like, it's everywhere and it's in our faces if we choose to pay attention, because our society kind of sets it up for women to be props in some sort of way, either a status symbol or something to use or abuse. Do you know what I mean? It's not always black and white like that, but a system like human trafficking is largely made, like, the way was clear for something like this to exist because of the way we think of sex and sex work and what we think about people who, how we victimize victims in a lot of ways. Do you know what I mean? And so, again, Santoya Brown is a prime example, like how we police how a victim should behave and things like that. So I'm going to talk about a bunch of stuff. But anyway, so if this is not your thing, thank you for listening thus far. And if it is, stay tuned because I really would like to hear more. I'm going to quote stats and things like that from what I've learned being in Baltimore and working with different organizations. And yeah, stay tuned. So my first introduction to human trafficking came in an interesting way, actually. When I moved to Syracuse to work at the community center where I worked, I was able to work with folks who were from in and around Jersey, Newark, New Jersey, and New York City proper, New York City and Newark. Those are two separate places. Newark is outside of New York City. Anyway, so these two women were both in Syracuse because they were former addicts. They were recovering addicts. And mind you, by the time I got to know them, they were clean many years by then, but they were so open and so willing to help anyone and educate wherever they could, share their knowledge and what they learned. We got to talking and they were very open about their story. And one woman, she had an addiction, and in order to feed that addiction, she began to engage in sex work. And it was all on her own. She never had anyone controlling her or telling her what to do, but she interacted with a lot of young girls and women who did. And she, you know, she engaged in it because she had an addiction and she had no other means to, at the time, support herself. And she was just trying to feed her habit. And so, but she was able to break free from that after many fits and starts. She shared, it took her a minute, but she got herself together. And she was able to break free from that. And one of the ways she was able to do that was literally to leave New York City and come to Syracuse. And she enrolled in a program and then she stayed here helping people along the way, helping other women who were sent out here from New York, from Newark, to get clean and change over their lives. And then that's when they let me know that, like, Syracuse was a big drug recovery, addiction recovery location for a number of different reasons. Number one, it was just a way to get out of the city. And number two, this central New York is very scenic and very beautiful. They have the Finger Lakes and all of that, which, sidebar, very beautiful. You should take any opportunity to go to New York State, specifically central New York, and visit the Finger Lakes. They're beautiful. Anyhow, but a lot of rich people live out there and there are a lot of summer homes there, but it's just generally beautiful. So that it also makes a great opportunity for treatment centers to open up there and create, like, oh, an oasis. So you know, out of the big city, you can come out here and you can get clean. And so there's just a large growing industry there. And so the other woman that I befriended who shared her story, she came out there largely because, number one, she was also getting clean, but then number two, she needed to get away. She needed to get away because she had an addiction problem too, but her situation was different because she got wrapped up in sex work because her man was encouraged her to do so. And he was also using, and so she was using, and so they were dependent on her making money through sex work to feed their habit. And so she had tried several times to get off of, get clean. And because she was in that relationship, it just was hard for her to stay clean. And so she had to finally leave him in order to do that. And she did that. And like I said, by the time I met her and the other woman that I had mentioned, they were clean many years, at that point. And they made their life in Syracuse because they wanted to give back, and they were able to give back in that very specific way. And so in conversations with them talking about sex work, cause I'm an inquisitive person. And so I just wanted to learn more about their stories and, you know, why they want to share, and what they get out of being in Syracuse. Cause at the time I didn't get it. I didn't get why they wanted to be in Syracuse. Syracuse for the most part was another one of those, as far as I'm concerned, one of those northern states, which they want to be liberal. They want to be, you know, they are liberal, but they also have these kind of backward, kind of pseudo racist, weird, not pseudo racist. They are racist. They just don't know that they don't think themselves as being racist sort of ways, where it's like, oh, I have a black friend. I'm not racist. I can't be racist. I don't say this and I don't say that. I don't outwardly call folks, you know, black folks out of their names or brown folks out of their names. But no, you have racist practices when you treat people of color like pets in a large way, in a way. But that's another conversation. But anyway, so I'm in Syracuse and I'm like, I don't really want to be here because this ain't the move. But they enjoyed it there because they were interacting with a lot of women who had been in their shoes, one way or another, had been in their shoes, and they were helping. So, in conversations with them, I still had no desire to stay in Syracuse, but it was just good to learn more about them and to know that they were being fed, their spirit was being fed, they're, you know, were able to do what they wanted to do and feel supported. They, you know, they had shared that, you know, a lot of the women and girls that they had, interacted with, one of the things that they would do is, you know, take them from New York or the New York area, greater New York area, including Newark, and take them down to Florida because that's where they made their money. And also that was kind of like an isolation trick. And I didn't understand that that was an isolation trick until I moved to Baltimore, again, right along the corridor 95. That's when, in engaging in the nonprofit work that I did, I started to engage with centers that were exclusive to supporting women who were escaping spousal or intimate partner violence, and then also human trafficking. Which, by the way, just a little side note, human trafficking doesn't always include sex work. It can also include domestic work. It's basically, and a lot of this, it's a smaller percentage, but nevertheless, you know, young people, women, especially people who English is not their first language, maybe they don't even speak English well, are snapped up and forced into, or tricked or bamboozled, however you want to say it, into these situations where they are forced to do work, whatever that work is, for the people, for their captors, and then are kind of tricked into saying, well, this is the only way now that you can truly support your family, or because you're, you know, you're doing sex work, your family won't even take you back. So how about you just throw them a couple bones every so often, but then you know, keep doing this because you can't do nothing else. You can't speak English. What you doing? What you doing out here? You know, you got to speak English here, or you know, you got to have a vocation. You stupid. You ain't got no job. You don't have no skills. Do you know what I mean? All the tricks that sex traffickers and human traffickers pull to try to isolate a person. No different than R. Kelly and the things that he did in a lot of ways, isolating these young girls and women from their families and the people that they cared about, and then had a whole system in place to keep them safe, meaning the kidnappers, the perpetrators safe and insulated to be able to keep these people away. And so that's not any different in many ways. It's not any different than what human traffickers do. And human traffickers traffic young women, girls, and non-binary folks and boys, because at the end of the day, they're using people as a commodity. They don't really care how you identify, so long as they can make a buck off of you and they can control you and manipulate you. So that's why it's human trafficking, because it's anyone that these predators can prey on and get some money off of. And so anyway, so I moved to Baltimore, and then I started engaging with these organizations that shared, oh yeah, they try to target folks who are younger, and which is where the age 12 comes in, and because it's part of the statistics, and then also who are coming from either quote unquote broken homes or who are easily manipulated or can be more easily manipulated into trusting them, and are pulled away from their people who care about them. And one of the ways that they do it is obviously shower gifts on them and attention, not unlike what R. Kelly did to a lot of the girls that he was engaging with. But then also, so they shower gifts on them, they earn their trust, and then very quickly they spirit them away from where they were, their home, basically. And so what ends up happening, especially in Baltimore, and right along with the ladies, the women were telling me in Syracuse, is they would put them on a bus or they would put them in a van with other girls, and they would send them, ship them on south down 95. And so what we're learning is, and if you go to humantraffickinghotline.org, which was at one point, I'm sure, just a hotline, but now it's a website that has, it's very interactive, actually. You can literally look, click on your state and understand the human trafficking statistics in your state, how many open cases there are right now, how many alleged, the risk factors that are present there in the area, as well as some of the reported, not, they're not cases yet, but they're like something might be happening. So basically tips on someone who might be trafficked. And if you look, so 95 all the way from Maine to Florida, but specifically if you look at this, at New York, New Jersey, Delaware, Maryland, PA, Pennsylvania, Virginia, North Carolina, South Carolina, Georgia, and Florida, the entire corridor, what you find is in the major cities, in the bigger, in the states that are more population dense, like New York and Florida, you've got since 2000, they keep numbers since 2007, this website. And apparently, I think that's when the website might have gone live, or they might have been more organized to share this information and collect it. But since 2007, what we know is all of those states have reported cases over the thousands of people who are known to be trafficked and need safety, need to be brought to safety, and their captors need to be brought to justice. And in certain states like Florida and New York, that number since 2007 is over 2,000 cases. And if you look at 2018, Florida and New York have, New York has 300 reported, over 300 reported cases of someone who's known to be trafficked and needs safety. And Florida has over 400, right? More population dense. And in a lot of these instances, these are locations where people are being trafficked. They're being trafficked up and down the 95 corridor. But then also for some reason, and I'm still not understanding why, but I mean, it kind of lends itself to what I'm seeing now, is South Carolina is in the 200s, was in the 200, over 200 cases of human trafficking in 2018. And Maryland itself was over 100. I think there are 120 cases of human trafficking. And so it depends. Obviously, folks are being taken from other places and being brought other, you know, either taken from some places and being brought other places, vice versa. I'm not really sure the origin of these cases, other than, like, I don't know if these cases are being reported from people who are missing from these states or people who were brought to these states. I don't know that just yet. But the data is that these are the active cases. These organizations who are out here trying to rescue people who are in human trafficking situations are helping to populate these numbers and working in tandem with law enforcement to try to help women who don't want to, or people who don't want to be in human traffic, or who don't want to be in sex work, out of that. And again, we need to separate people who want to engage in sex work, which, again, I don't know if these women across in this hotel that is across from me are engaging in sex work because they want to. I'm willing to bet that they're not, because why else are these dudes sitting outside their door? Like, it's very, I've seen too many documentaries, but again, that documentaries doesn't mean that you know anything, but it just seems real weird that you'd have these goons sitting outside your door when you handling this business. It just doesn't seem like I can't see these faces, so I don't know how old the age of these folks. These, what I'm seeing are women presenting people coming in and out of the door. I don't know how old they are. I don't know if that's a sex trafficking situation, but it's very clear that this hotel that's right across from us is used for sex work. And sex work where it seems as if somebody's a pimp. And again, my cousin confirmed that, yeah, they get raided all the time for that. And it's just like, there's a difference between somebody who's human trafficked, who's being human trafficked, and someone who's engaging in sex work because they want to. I would like to think that these women are engaging because they want to, but I just don't know. But it was just so appalling to me how out front and in the open it was. And how when the hubby and I came, there was essentially people on the balconies serving something like a lookout. Do you know what I mean? Like waiting to see who was the cops or not, to try to, you know, switch the situation up if necessary. And so anyway, it's just, you see stuff like that and you don't want to be a prude, because at the end of the day, if a person is engaging in sex work because they want to and it's consensual, that ain't none of my business. And I wish our laws were done in such a way that people could more freely engage in that. Maybe we wouldn't have all these deviants out here hurting people and trafficking. There wouldn't be a market for trafficking people, especially young people underage, and manipulating people, if there was a safe marketplace for people who wanted to engage in sex work to begin with. But another conversation, I guess. But anyway, but the fact remains that these numbers are high and they're not slowing down. And in fact, I was talking to my cousin and she shared that, what's that boy's name? Kodak Black, who I could spend all day talking about how I can't stand him, which he didn't have a platform. I hope he would get deplatformed at some point. I don't want any harm to come to him because I don't speak. I don't do that. But deplatformed. Take your money source away. You are toxic and terrible and have literally hurt people. This Negro, she told me that he had done a concert at an arena that's not far from where we're staying, and at a hotel that wasn't very far from where we're currently staying, had sexually assaulted a young woman and served jail time not very far from where we're staying, or prison time because of it. And it's just like, so yeah, this is like an industry here. And my thing is like, who's trying to solve the root of this thing? Because what we know is that young girls and people in general are being snatched daily, depending on where, what state you're in, into human trafficking. And again, it's not always sex work, forced sex work. Sometimes it's forced domestic work, but nevertheless, they're being trafficked. They're being trafficked. They're being trafficked and we know about it. So what are we doing about it? And again, it's like, we see this stuff, like I'm saying, point blank period. Everybody knows that this stuff goes down in this area. You mean to tell me there's a reason why when hubby and I, when we checked into the hotel, that you couldn't come into the corridor, into nothing but the corridor. You couldn't come into the foyer of the hotel because they don't trust people around here. They done been through some things. They done seen some stuff. Some foul stuff goes down. Oh, I was about to cuss. Some foul stuff goes down in and around here. My thing is, where are the people trying to stop this stuff? It's one thing to try to stop a person who's willingly engaging in sex work with someone who wants to also engage with sex work and give them money for it. That's a separate matter. And again, I have strong feelings about there should be a safe and clean market for that. But because our society is prudish in the way it is, we're vilifying people who manipulate people into sex work. The same as we put people who manipulate people in the same category as folks who are doing it of their own free will. And the thing about it is, it shouldn't be a gray area. It's not. These are not the same. And again, I really hope and pray that these women that I'm seeing are engaging in this sex work because they want to. But I don't know. These folks that are sitting outside these doors, they don't look like they here because they're trying to look out for this person. It look like they sitting outside these doors to protect their merchandise. Because again, at the end of the day, just like with R. Kelly, these people, these young boys, girls, women, non-binary people are property to them. They're not people. They're property to them. And they are property that does work and they get paid for that work. Meaning the traffickers, not, and the pimps, not the people themselves, whose bodies they are not sacrificing, because that's weird, but like whose bodies they're using. Come on. And so it's appalling to me, the number of people. And again, go to that website, National Human Trafficking Hotline.org. And there's also a number associated with it. It just blows my mind And again, I aligned myself with an organization in Baltimore who they had many women. They had certain beds. You know how centers have a certain amount of beds, especially if you also are a shelter. They had a certain number of beds and they would turn those beds over every so often. This particular shelter never kept a bed. They always had somebody in those beds because there was always someone that needed their support. Always someone who needed resources to get out of, again, that being intimate partner violence and then human trafficking. And in most cases, when I was for this particular women's center/shelter that I was working with, it was human trafficking. It wasn't domestic work. Although, again, domestic work, that's a real thing. What I'm learning, especially in New York and Florida, for some reason, people do love to kidnap folk or trick folk, bamboozle folk into doing domestic work and giving them and then putting them in these rickety rack messed up hotels that aren't really hotels, shouldn't be a hotel. But you know what I'm saying? Like a hostel. Giving them very little resources with the promise of, oh yeah, you're really stacking these chips for your family. Knowing good and well that you're not going to give none of those resources to their family. Not like that. Anyway, it's just, I know this is a kind of depressing episode, but at the same time, it's a real thing. And go to this, if you're in the United States, obviously the National Human Trafficking Hotline.org is only for folks, for statistics in the United States. But certainly, I'm sure that they have links to international websites that can help, you know, because as I know, some folks who are listening to this are not in the United States. So definitely do your research because there's information, especially if you're talking about your immigrant population. Your immigrant population is vulnerable to human trafficking for domestic work or sex work or both. And so it's important that we stay up on the statistics. We know how to get involved because one thing about the website, you learn these statistics in your area and how they break it down, and they break it down so smoothly in terms of age, not necessarily ethnicity, but like the circumstances under which folks are taken and the different cases and things like that. But then they also list the organizations that you can align yourself with. So do your research in the organization because that's important too. But definitely if this is something that's on your heart, like it's on mine, definitely engage with that organization in the best way that they want to be worked with, not what you think they should be getting. You ask that organization what they need help with, because just because you want to volunteer because you think it's cool doesn't mean that you should. Not everybody has the countenance to be supporting someone who is a survivor of forced sex work, human trafficking. But you might have the coins to do that, or you might be able to do host a fundraiser, bring awareness, show a screening of a film. There are several HBO documentaries that you can point to. I think Little Girls is one of them, talking about human trafficking and how hard it is for people to get out of those situations. It's really not unlike domestic violence or intimate partner violence situation. It's just hard to leave. And sometimes it takes many times for folks to leave. But then there are also other documentaries that you can, again, you can probably get the rights to and screen at your school if you're in school, like a college. And depending on if you're in high school, because again, what we know is that a lot of these folks that are targeted are middle school age. And so it's important to have some sort of information and language around this to talk to anybody who needs the information. Anyway, so yeah, it's just important to share the information. It's important to share the information with everybody who needs it, especially, and don't shy away from the conversation. If you have 12-year-olds, if you have 13, 14-year-olds who are in your life, and it's not even about them being susceptible, because you just never know. You just never know. A person can come from a quote unquote good two-parent household and still be susceptible to joining what, again, the women that I worked with back in Syracuse called the life. And joining it is a really loose term. What it is being manipulated, being glamored into getting in that life. And then they find themselves waking up in a situation that they can't get out of. So again, the website is National Human Trafficking Hotline.org. There's a number that you can dial as well, but go to the website, get all the statistics, and also find the organizations that you could connect with, because you're gonna help somebody. You are gonna help somebody, because these organizations need help, and some of these folks don't even know it, but they need help too. Okay, off my soapbox. That is it for this episode. Thank you so much for listening. yeah, please, if you want to interact with me about this episode or any other episode, definitely click the link in the show description. It'll take you straight to my anchor.fm page. You can leave me a voice message. You don't have to download a thing in the world. Just leave me a message about how you felt about this episode or anything you learned about this or anything you know personally about it or how it this subject touched you. Or, you know, if you just want to engage just in generally, I'd love to hear from you. And also, while you're on my page, if you want to, you can leave a donation. There's also a button for that, too. Even 99 cents is a helpful contribution and will just help just generally keep this show going. But if that's not something you want to do, just share this episode with somebody. Tell somebody about it. That's how you can help me get more ears on this thing to keep it going. Okay? So be sure to leave me a favorable rating again on my anchor page or anywhere you listen to this, any podcast. So Apple, Google, Spotify, Pocket Cast, Radio Public, all the places. Definitely leave me a favorable rating. I sure appreciate you. All right. Until next time. Take care.